Welcome to the Creative Circle Podcast, the show where we talk to professionals inside the production or related industries and find out how they got to where they are today and see if we can pick their brains for a little bit of advice. Aaron, who do we have on the show today?
I'm super excited for today's guests. I'm actually excited for all of our guests, but today we're excited for Ash Thorpe. Ash is a designer, director, illustrator. He does concept work for films like Total Recall, Prometheus, the title sequence to X-Men First Class. Really cool guy. We got to talk to him today about how he got to where he is.
Well, awesome. What are we waiting for? Let's get him on the phone.
So today we're talking to Ash Thorpe. Would you explain for some of our listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with what you do and what design direction is, kind of what you're all about and what your work is?
Yeah. I am kind of a jack of all trades in the film industry. That's kind of where I work, and I do all kinds of stuff. I do everything from helping design direction on commercials to like concept design, and I'm getting more into developing story and directing and cinematography kind of stuff nowadays. So, but I do the whole thing pretty much, and everything that I can show or that represents my work now is based on more of the film industry and Hollywood kind of stuff right now. So
yeah, some more of the entertainment side.
yeah. Entertainment and games and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah. So on this show, we kind of talk about people's journeys of how they got to where they are today.
Okay.
And so we're going to kind of start at the beginning a little bit. Was there any point in your early life where you were, where you decided this is what I want to do, or art is really the thing that makes me excited?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up, my mom, I was raised by a single mother, and we struggled financially my entire childhood. Mm-hmm. We were really poor. And my imagination was my way of escaping the reality, not necessarily because it was a bad reality. I grew up in Hawaii, but it was a way for me to kind of create the worlds that I couldn't afford. Or, you know, I always wanted toys and these different types of things. And I used my imagination to basically kind of really create my own imagination. So I think I've been in love with creating and doing art since I can remember grabbing a pencil. I knew that was exactly what I wanted to do at the earliest age that I can remember, really, to be honest. And yeah, I love it. You know, it's like I tell my wife it's my mistress because it keeps me up late at night and it keeps me, you know, it keeps me focused on what I'm doing on, you know, various projects and jobs. But yeah, I mean, since I was a kid, really.
Yeah. Was there someone who helped encourage you in that direction or kind of push you towards where you ended up going?
You know, everybody I've encountered in my life has been really great and very supportive. I mean, everyone, from my friends to my family to, you know, my brother, mm-hmm. and everybody's been really always very supportive. And that's, you know, that's a huge, it's always been a great foundation for me, you know. And I actually come from an artist family. My mom's really talented as well. She's a great draftsman. And my grandmother and my grandfather, my great-grandfather, and we kind of have like, people say there's like a talent kind of thing, you know. I don't really believe in that necessarily, but I there's definitely something to be said about, you know, people that in a family that are, you know, driven by art and culture and stuff. And so, yeah, they've all supported me through the, from the beginning.
Really awesome.
Yeah, it really is. It's essential, I think, especially at an early age of development.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit before and you had mentioned that you're really self-taught in this area, and didn't really attend university or college for very long. So, kind of along those lines, what did you do to really teach yourself and get kind of into the area where you are now? And were there people who really helped you learn those things?
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
So education, I mean, that's probably like the second question I get asked when people find out what I do mm-hmm. for a living. They ask, you know, did you go to school for that and this and that? And it's a wide question because I feel that to do kind of what I do or to get where I come from is it's so broad and so wide and I don't think it can be really necessarily taught. Mm-hmm. And so I mean, it can be, you can learn a lot, and I'm not trying to knock college or school or anything like that in general. I think it's great. I think it's important to learn, I'm not sure if I really believe in the foundation of the system we have currently, but I do think that learning is vital. And I did go to college. I did get an associate's degree and a bachelor degree, but I felt that I had outgrown the college and the place that I had gone pretty early on. I didn't feel like it had what I was striving for, you know, and I couldn't afford to go to like the really expensive colleges. I really wanted to go. I live out in Southern California, and there's a college here in Pasadena called the Art Center, mm-hmm. and it's got some of the best talent in our country, and that's where I was striving to go. But I didn't want to necessarily be in like $200,000 of debt before even starting a job, and that kind of concerned mm-hmm. me. So I figured, you know what, this world is changing. There's information everywhere, and if you're smart enough and you're driven, you can just get a book and analyze it and study it and become better. You know, I think that's pretty much been the way that I kind of approached all this. Mm-hmm. Is I'm really big and really into books, and I have like a decent collection of books that I'm building. And I don't know. I think that that's kind of been where I think is where everything's going, and how I learned is basically like just through my own passion and studying other artists and reading about them and understanding how they do things and their methodology and the way of thinking. And once I understand the craft, now it's more or less I'm trying to think about the mythology and actually becoming my own artist myself as a creative thinker and a contributor to the, you know, our community as well. So, mm-hmm. but I mean, sorry if that's a little off topic, but I mean, it's a huge question, and I get asked it all the time. And basically, to sum it up, I don't really think you need to go to college. And I hope people don't get mad at me for saying that. I think that you can, if you're resourceful, you can teach yourself everything. And some of my favorite artists and some of my favorite creators, they didn't go to college, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessarily vital to your success, you know.
Yeah, I think that's right on. I think college is one of those things that can be a useful tool for some people and a useful means of learning things, but it's not the only path.
It is not, you know, and that's what's cool about what this is. It's not, it's a path, right? You know, mm-hmm. and I think it's everybody has a different way of getting to the same destination. And I think that, you know, I think what makes a great school and to make us a great experience is the teachers that you get, you know, and the people that instruct you mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. So I think those are the vital ingredients that make the journey even better, but not all our schools are packed with, you know, certified or, you know, mm-hmm. eligible people to be teaching you. And I think that was my frustration. I didn't feel like the teachers, I didn't feel like I had a connection with them or, you know, and I felt like they had my interest in mind mm-hmm. to teach me the things that I was interested in, you know? So,
So you talk about, you know, liking to read and getting a lot of stuff from reading. Are there, other ways that you helped kind of teach yourself some of these things besides books?
Yeah. You know, recently this past year, I've been reaching out to lots of people, on the internet and just talking with them through email or through like iChat or whatever. And just talking directly to the authors basically and getting a direct source like that. So it's more dynamic because it's a relatable, like way of learning basically, like, oh, so with this project, how did you approach this and that, you know? So just being more inquisitive mm-hmm. and then using technology and the things that we have at our fingertips now to just ask, you know, and reach out to people. And surprisingly, there's a lot of really great people out there. And you know, you would think that I think a lot of people would be more closed off, and there's a lot of people that, you know, for every 10th, you know, email, there's only, you only get like one reply, but that one reply is worth all of them, you know? So, but, yeah, I mean, that's another way, you know, I think books are great, but at the same time, you know, the internet and reaching out to people and communicating is also a really valuable tool. So, which has worked as well. So,
yeah. Was there a time when you decided that this was kind of the part of, or the advertising industry and that whole side of things was what you wanted to do? Or did you meet people who were already working in that? How did you kind of move towards the design direction side of things in the broad scope of the artistic world?
Yeah. Okay. So, before I've only been in this industry now for, I think around 3 years now. And, I had, decided that, I was working at a job and I felt like I really wanted to do more with myself and my life. And so I dedicated like 3 months of time on my own hours, like after work, and developing like a portfolio that I felt like was decent enough to try and get the attention of studios like Prologue and you know, the other studios like that, and PSYOP and all them. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I mean, it was a blessing. I got hired by Prologue. Kyle and his wife Kim hired me as a junior designer, and that's really when it all started. And I spent a year there, and I worked as hard as I could and learned as much as I could from all the amazing. There's so many amazing, talented people just in that little shop. It was really incredible. And so that was kind of, I had decided before Prologue, and luckily I got hired by, in my opinion, was one of the best companies, and by working with them and working side by side with some of these amazing people, it really helped me up my understanding of what's good work and how to get that and how to get it fast and efficiently and stuff. So, but yeah, and it's I don't necessarily I'm not a huge fan of like commercial type stuff. I mean, when I watch TV, I don't watch the commercials, to be honest. Like, it's not, I feel like it's a distraction. So it's like, that's not my sole intent. I'm not necessarily like a commercial guy. I don't want to sell like 7-Up and stuff like that, but I do understand its validity in this world and how things turn and go, but I'm more interested in film and telling story and stuff, especially nowadays. So,
yeah.
But yeah, that's where I'm driving myself now. So,
Do you think that you're kind of interested in films that are more graphically oriented or kind of related to the style that you've developed? Or are you interested in maybe more live action storytelling, or is it just kind of all of those things?
You know, it's like movies are just like friends. You know, they're so different. Each one has its own contributing part to what you like and what you don't like. I like films that have good story, you know, like that's, to me, you can skin genre any different way. You know, I don't think genre can be skinned any time. You can put, you know, you can take Star Wars script and put in a Western and it would work if you change certain things, you know? So I think to me, I'm mostly just connected to stories that are relatable or believable and, you know, whatever form that comes in, and how the director tries to tell it. Either way, as long as it hits those points for me, that's all I care about, really, to be honest. So, but that's all I'm trying to create myself and write and study and understand what makes great film. And that's, you know, it's such a task, you know, it's such a task to make a good film.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I honestly, I'm not really big, on like, you know, like the super action packed films, to be honest. I enjoy them. They're good. They're like simple pleasure, but I'm more into like the emotional driven side of stories and stuff. I think that those resonate with me personally more. So,
yeah, totally. I think it was really good what you said about being at Prologue and being surrounded by the community of what I've been listening to a lot of Nick Campbell's podcasts and talks over at Grayscale Guerrilla. And I think one of the really good things that he keeps bringing up over and over again is the importance of being surrounded by people who are maybe better at their job than we are, or smarter than we are, and you just grow so much from that. And that's cool to see that happen.
Absolutely. A great team, I think, is of people that are like-minded, that complement each other's weaknesses with their strengths, you know? And if you can have that collaborative effort with no ego, you can really produce some amazing projects. And I think that's, you know, when we look back at some really great projects that, you know, the world has been blessed with, you know, we can see that there was a lot of that happening. You know, movies and these kind of things don't get made to be good without a good team of people, you know, that there's a lot of disconnection and frustration and rage within the film, the development, you can feel it in the film, the final output, you know, but if you can tell that there's a lot of people that worked on this that were fans of the genre and were really passionate about it, you can feel it. It's honest. It's an honest art, you know? And I think great art takes honesty. And I think working with a good team is absolutely, and probably my biggest complaint or concern for myself as a freelancer who works from home. I'm completely isolated from physical, like other people. And I love being around other people. Mm-hmm. So hopefully maybe in the coming year or so, I'm going to create like a collaborative, I don't know, office or something like that for all my friends to work together in. We can kind of have a cool little hub of energy, because that's, I think that's, you know, Nick is completely right, and it's vital, you know, to have people around you that you can, you know, riff off and talk with and develop your concepts with. You know, I do it all through Skype and iChat now, and it works. It's almost as good, but it's not completely right there.
So. That's something I think a lot of the students here on campus feel, at least to some extent, because we're in Minnesota. We're kind of like in the middle of nowhere. And yeah. So like, how do you connect with these people who you can, you know, draw from and whatnot? And so you said Skype and
email.
Email. Yeah. Is there anything else you do to kind of stay connected to people or the industry?
Yeah, you know, like, you know, obviously we have email, and then I recently started using Twitter, which is really cool. I really like that because it's short and brief and simple, and you can follow people, and it's interesting what people think and say. And, you know, Skype to communicate, obviously we're using it now. And what else is there? I mean, I use Basecamp for projects and jobs, keeps things kind of like clean and keeps a thread of information going, which is cool. But yeah, I mean, being isolated, like, you know, like you're mentioning, it could be a problem, to be honest. You know, there's an energy that you get when you're around other people, you know, especially people that are better than you. There's the competitive side. At least it comes out in me, and I want to be as good as everybody else or better, you know. And I'm very competitive and passionate, and when I'm in that environment, it pushes my creativity, you know. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's this interesting dynamic, you know, creating, you know, it's a really interesting thing. And it's, yeah, it's just so weird to think that I do this for a living. To be honest, I just can't believe it. I feel like I'm going to wake up each day and it's just going to fall away. And it's just, you know, I'm just thankful every day, basically, that I get to do what, you know, I've kind of dreamt about as a child and continually dream, you know, so.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think so.
It's exciting. Maybe to shift gears just a little bit, I think I think you really covered this pretty well with Justin Cohn on Motionographer, but one of the things that we've spent a little bit of time on this show talking about, and maybe we're kind of talking more about it just given some discussions we've been having personally between Philip and I kind of outside of this, but I think talking about work-life balance is really interesting because that's something that can be a real problem for some people. Some people really get into the work side of things and need to find balance in their life. But I thought it was really great that you've been intentional about not only being the best at your job, but also, you know, being there for your wife and children and things like that. I think that's really important to have that intentionality and make time for those things.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, that's a huge one. And I really want to thank Justin and the crew at Motionographer for, you know, that interview. I think that was a really great one, and it was pivotal, and it was cool because I'm direct and honest. I don't really care to hide anything from anybody, and this is just kind of how I work. And it's a full-time job to even just try to be a good husband and a dad, to be honest, you know. I mean, it's an effort. It takes a lot of work, but it's a commitment, you know. And it's the same thing with, you know, if I have a client, I commit to them and I tell them, hey, I'm going to do this project for you, and I'm going to spend this much time, and it's going to cost this amount, and blah blah blah. And these are commitments, you know. And so I think deciding and choosing what to do with your time is vital. But you know how you do that, it's really hard, and it instantly becomes, like, you know, destructive if you don't know how to control it. And especially like my office is in my home, so it's like I never leave work, you know, like it's always here, you know. I get in bed and I have my iPad, and then I'm studying what I'm, you know, trying to figure out a problem, or I'm reading a brief or a script. So I'm always constantly inundated with it. But I think for me, it's always like the choice. It's like, okay, now it's time to choose. The family's home. I got to shut this stuff down for a bit and socialize and be with them and, you know, do dinner and all that kind of stuff and have those important, you know, important moments, you know. So my daughter's 7 years old now, and I think, you know, I have a bad memory, so I can't remember my childhood super well, but I do remember these are really important years for anybody developing, and you want to have a good support group, and you want to make sure your parents are present, you know, mentally and physically. And so just trying to make sure you have that effort and put the extra energy in. But, you know, hey, it's a struggle every day. It's a struggle. It brings new challenges each day. And I think it's something that it kind of, you know, if I think of myself like without my family, how would I be? And it would be, you know, I don't want to lose my family. I don't like that thought, but mm-hmm. thinking about the dynamics of what it would be if I was like a single man. And honestly, I think it's harder to have a family, but I think it gives me balance and purpose, mm-hmm. a higher purpose, I suppose, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm supporting somebody's living, you know, I'm supporting somebody's life. So I have to take my job even that much more serious. You know, there's no chance. There's no room for failure, basically. So it makes the intensity of the art, gives it more respect, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but it's really, you know, it's really hard. And I think people that struggle with it really need to understand how to make choices properly and need to understand when to say no to people, even their family, you know, like say, no, I can't do that right now because I have this or I have that. And, you know, respect what they're doing. And if they're doing freelance, try to treat their office or their working space as an office and, mm-hmm. you know, clock in and clock out if you can. It's really hard. The problem I have, and my wife and I talk about, is I'm super passionate. I love what I do. So mm-hmm. it's part of me, you know, it's a part of every day. So I love what I do. And so it bleeds into everything in my life, you know, so right. I'm constantly thinking about it, you know, always. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So, but yeah.
Do you do any like geographical separation of your work life at all? Do you have like a particular space that when I'm here, I'm working, or?
No, I mean, I just have, you know, my office is our third bedroom, and mm-hmm. that's just turned into my office. We're hoping if we get another house to have the actual office an extension of the house, mm-hmm. like separate from the house, so I can have side entrance and stuff, and mm-hmm. maybe something a little bit bigger to have people come and work with me in. So it'll be a little bit different, you know. But no, I mean, it's right now. It's just in our house, so. Mm-hmm. It's connected, so it's like it's connected as the kitchen is. So it's a vital entity of our house, I suppose. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. but I mean, it's like I said though, it's a choice, you know. Like right. I can either choose to sit in here and work and cram and figure things out, or I can choose to not. You know, it's like it's at the end of the day, I'm just making the choices, you know. So
yeah. Was it difficult early on to switch from maybe a more traditional work mentality? I'm not sure what you were doing before that, but was it difficult to switch to being a freelancer where you have to be scheduling all these jobs and making sure that you've got enough work coming in? And was it?
Yeah, it's a very nerve-wracking thing to do freelance. You know, I think it's in our nature to be comfortable with routine, you mm-hmm. know, as a human. We like comfort, you know, we like comfort and security. It's like why we have insurance. And you know, there's so many reasons why, but I think being a freelancer, it goes against a lot of those, you know, comfort, mm-hmm. you know, routines, basically. So, and yeah, I mean, I moved out when I was 14, and I'd done all kinds of different jobs just to support myself. You know, I worked at like Subway and like Denny's, you know, like everything mm-hmm. I could do just to support myself. So I come from working like, you know, the blue collar worker, kind of like a 9-to-5 kind of thing. And I'm used to that. And I, you know, to be honest, I hated it. Always hated it. I felt mm-hmm. like I don't want a boss. I don't want to answer to anybody. I don't want to deal with that. But the answer to that is a lot more responsibility on me because I'm my own boss. And if you're not on top of your game, then you will have to fire yourself or you'll lose everything, you know? So, mm-hmm. Being a freelancer, absolutely. At the beginning, it was nerve wracking, you know, like trying to figure it out. And I mean, I'm not just a designer, artist guy. I wish I could just do that, to be honest, but I'm honestly now it's like all these calls and emails, and I spend half of my day just dealing with reading emails, to be honest. There's hundreds of emails I have to figure out and respond to people and communicate and get things going. So I'm like an email master now, but you know, like I wish, and maybe I'll have to, you know, maybe when things get bigger or something like that, I'll have to get somebody to help me do that administrative mm-hmm. stuff. But as a freelancer, it's like, absolutely. It's like, I learned how to do payroll now, and I learned how to shuffle and juggle. And now I learned how to set schedules and book things and set timing, you know, and there was a lot of, you know, learn as I go kind of things, you know, where I would double book myself and be completely consumed and destroyed basically. And then understand that I can't do that, you know, and, mm-hmm. and try to respect my own body and get sleep and stuff like that. So, but mm-hmm. it's, I mean, I could ramble on and on. I think it's one thing that you just have to do. If you decide to do it, you have to do it, and you have to be ready, and you have to understand, you know, you got to be good with timing. You got to be good with communication. You know, people pay you for not only for yourself, but they also pay you to be professional, and you got to respect their time as much as yours and communicate properly with them, you know? So mm-hmm.
Along those lines, was there anything in the jobs you had beforehand that really helped kind of get into this? Or were there any things that in retrospect that maybe you wish you would have learned before taking that jump to do freelance?
Yeah, you know, I think it was more of a learning, like, I hated doing it. You know, I hated having a boss. I hated replying to somebody. I just couldn't stand that. And I couldn't stand clocking in, and I just felt like a robot. And so I think, if anything, I learned things I didn't want to do, or how to, like, not run a business from people, and understanding, like, how they did it and the dynamics of how they ran their business. I would understand, like, well, I don't like that. I'm not going to treat people like that. I'm not going to do that. And so I learned from all the negative things, I guess, or people's mistakes in my own mind. So it's not necessarily like the things that I felt that were beneficial. And then I also, you know, I don't know, I just like to pay attention to everything. I have like a very inquisitive personality. I like to understand how things work. And so business is, to me, is the same thing as an engine, you know, and if you can keep the business really efficient and clean and strong, it'll be like just a really well tuned engine. But if you don't know how to, you know, set it up, it's going to be bad and it's going to break down. And so I think, as far as learning from other people, there's, you know, there's a lot of good, but I think there's a lot of the things I learned that I didn't want to do, you know, and mm-hmm. I told myself that if I ever have my own company, or if I ever do my own thing, I would not like to do that. I would like to be different, you know, and, you know, I don't know. That answered the question. Sorry, I got a little bit on a rant, tangent there. So
yeah, I think that totally makes sense. Okay. One of the things that we've talked about with people in the past, and I like that you kind of mentioned how scary it is to just jump out and do something that you've never done before.
Absolutely.
Is this idea that sometimes the things that terrify us the most are the biggest learning experiences and get us closest to kind of really move us towards those dreams and goals that we have.
And yeah. I mean, you have to jump, you know, mm-hmm. if you don't jump, then, you're just stuck on the cliff, and you're stuck there looking at the cliff, and you're also stuck there with the fear of falling off the cliff. So why not just jump, you know, like mm-hmm. people, I think, it's a trust issue with most people. And I think it's, a belief issue. I think people don't believe in themselves enough, you know, and I think that with our industry and what we do, it takes a lot of honesty, you know, mm-hmm. to create. I always say great work takes honesty, you know, like you can tell instantly if somebody's cheating something, you know, at least I can, or somebody's copying somebody, or they're not being honest with their work. It's like they're stealing something from somebody. I can tell that instantly. When somebody comes up with something brilliant and special, I know it took risk, and I know it took a lot of commitment, and it took somebody to, you know, to be like honest with themselves. And I think that it's important to take that jump. You know, people in general owe it to themselves to give themselves that jump, you know, that risk, you know, like when I had received the job at Prologue, I've been living in San Diego, and I had to figure out how I was going to go and commute every day from San Diego to LA. And so the only reason I did that now is because I have split custody with my daughter, and we have legal terms. We have to stay in San Diego. So I couldn't move us all up there. And so we had to stay in San Diego. But I knew that I had to take this risk and this jump because it was my opportunity. It was a golden opportunity. And I knew that from that opportunity that they had given me, that I would be able to do more things with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so by taking that risk and understanding how dynamic, how big that could have been, I mean, I could have lost my marriage. I could have lost my home. I could have lost everything. But I decided that it was worth the risk, and I was going to figure out how to make it happen, you know, and at the end of it, it was really hard, and it took a lot of work to fix some things, you know, but mm-hmm. at the end of it, the risk paid off tenfold because I'm happy now, you know, I'm content. I'm where I need to be, you know, as a mm-hmm. person. So I'm just living up to my own expectations, which are really high, and I'm very hard on myself. So, and I always expect myself to be the best that I can every day, you know, mm-hmm. just constantly thriving and trying to be the best, you know, which is never possible. It's always a journey, never a destination, you know? So, mm-hmm. but yeah, I think everybody owes it to themselves in their lives to take a risk on something. And trust me, if you fail, it's okay. Failure is a big part of success, you know? I mention it all the time, and when I talk to people, it's like, don't be afraid to fail. Every day, all day long, I'm failing until I figure it out. It's mm-hmm. probably why I don't sleep, because I have to figure things out until I feel successful enough, you know, to show a client. Yeah. But I mean, there's constantly, I'm throwing files away, or I'm trashing them, or I'm writing down things or sketching things out. And until I feel it hits it just right, then, you know, it works. But it's like a muscle, you know, and you have to exercise it, you know. Mm-hmm. I think the muscle of confidence is something that I think more people should do. I think this world would be a lot better if people took a little bit more risk, you know, and mm-hmm. tried things out. They'd be a lot more happy. But that's just my own opinion, though.
Yeah. No, I think those are some really good thoughts about those
Thanks.
Things. Maybe to focus in a little bit more, I've really enjoyed reading your blog, and one of the cool things on there, going back to the whole keeping your skills sharp and keeping kind of thinking about design, was the 10-minute projects, and those really resonated with me, and I thought those were really cool. Taking a little bit of time to throw something together and take some risks and see what comes of it every day.
Absolutely. I mean, that goes right with the same line of what we're talking about with, you know, the fear of failure, you know. That I haven't done those in a while, and I'm really upset that I haven't allowed myself to do them, because they were great, because 10 minutes might seem like a long time if you're just standing there, but 10 minutes when you're designing and creating something from scratch, from nothing, is like no time at all. Mm-hmm. It goes by so fast. And so you quickly understand what you're capable of doing within that time span, you know, and you understand, like, you know, oh, okay, well, if I'm in a rush and in a hurry, then I have these default things that I do, and it's a habitual. And then you notice that you have patterns in your design and where you do and where you go for. Like, say it's a simple font, and you realize, you know, I keep using that same font every time I'm in a rush. And so let me try to do something a little bit different here and try something a little bit, you know, change it up. So basically, it's kind of like a good thing for all kinds of reasons. It alters your time. It gives you understanding of how fast you are. At the same time, it shows you when you have repetition in your workflow, which repetition honestly leads to dull work, I think. Mm-hmm. It's something to me, and it's a hard one for all of us, is something gets tiring with the artist that never changes what they're doing. It's like, okay, cool, you're really great at that, but can you do something else? You know, let's see if you can do something else, you know. And that's kind of where I try to thrive, because, like, even for a good example, is I never really done user interface stuff ever before. I never really paid attention to it. But the Prometheus stuff came through, and I'm a big fan of Alien and all that kind of stuff. And so I was just excited, and I just, you know, figured I'd try it out. And so it's mm-hmm. It's trying different things and succeeding or failing, you know. And I think that I'm going on a tangent again. I apologize if I keep going off on these rants, but I think it's really good to just try different things, you know. And I think that the 10-minute project really, I think it really helps that. And I really recommend everybody, designers good and bad, should do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's vital. And if you have a friend to do it with, it makes it even more fun, because it's kind of competitive and funny, because you're like, wow, that really sucks, or this is great, or that's actually kind of cool. And then you want to mess with it. It's like, okay, let's do like a 30-minute off of that one,
mm-hmm.
you know, and let's come up with a really abstract idea. Like, the word is watch, and you have to design, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this is the size of the document, and go 10 minutes and then see what happens from that. And mm-hmm. I don't know. It's interesting. It's an interesting case study. So
yeah, I think those are really fun.
Yeah, yeah. I recommend them. Have you done them?
I have been doing them. I haven't done any in the last 2 months because I've been super busy. But
that's
I'm
awesome.
Trying to get back into that.
Get me going on it. Hit me up, and then we'll do them. Is it 10 minutes out of the day? I mean, what is that? You know, you can take a 10-minute break, even if you're really busy.
Totally.
So, and if it contributes to your mental health and your development as a viewing, thinking, creative person, I think it's vital to your growth, you know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. That's really good. Yeah, we actually just watched, Phil and I sat down and watched Total Recall before this to see those. And I thought your work is really awesome in that. So good good job on going from knowing nothing about interfaces to making the Total Recall stuff.
Yeah, that was a really, that was a crazy job. It was like 200 shots in the final film, which is a really big task for two people. And I was actually juggling, in the beginning of Total Recall, I was juggling three projects. One was another feature film, and another one was a commercial spot for Sony. And I nearly had a mental breakdown because I wasn't sleeping. And there's just an immense amount of pressure I put on myself to make things good. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge task, you know. There's millions of dollars being paid on that movie just to get it for people to see it.
Yeah.
And it's my responsibility to help with that and make something good and not just make something that's been regurgitated. So I try to really think about each scene and try to help them out, but at the same time, develop things that fit in that world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people ask me, like, oh, how would you look at this in the real world? It's like, oh, this is a, you know, film world and real world is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want that kind of stuff to use on my real life, you know? I'm happy with what Apple's provided for me to do, you know? Like, it would drive me nuts, but there's, with narrative graphics and stuff, you only have so much time on the screen and you only have so much, you know, you can do with it in space and stuff. But it was a really crazy ride, to be honest. It was a lot of work, and I was really blessed and thankful for the opportunity, and it kind of just fell right when it needed to go, I guess. And it was really, yeah, it was cool. And I'm glad it's had a really nice reception. Like, it's been received really well, which is cool. And to be honest, I have a hard time liking most of it because I don't like a lot of my work. I want it to be better, you know? So, and it was mostly due to time, to be honest. There was not enough time in the day for me to get what I wanted done, you know? So, but I was just stoked. And a big shout out to my buddy, Ryan Cashman, because he animated all that crazy stuff and he dealt with me being super crazy and like emailing him at like 3 a.m. like, can you move this around or can you do that? So he was a complete trooper. Without him, you know, that would have never happened. Mm-hmm. So it was a vital connection with him. And so that was, but thank you for your kind words. And, I don't know, it'd be cool to do some more of those. You know, I have a couple of other jobs that are like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it you know, the user interface thing, it's interesting how popular it is now. It's like, I mentioned it a couple of times. It's like, it's almost like the new lens flare in films. It's everywhere. it's just too much now, though, you know, and now it becomes senseless and pointless. And so I'm almost like, I like the counter of it, you know, so I try to make things as simple as possible. I'm a big fan of like Didierams and designers of an Apple and stuff like that. It's simplicity and getting to someplace simple, you know, so. But the Total Recall world was not about that. It's about, you know, cool, action-packed, crazy world stuff, you know.
Yep.
But, yeah, crazy job. I'm glad it's passed. Yeah.
Right.
Do you have any advice to any young people who are hoping to maybe someday be able to do something like user interfaces for movies?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that might sound weird and vague because I've never really done this stuff, and then I'm doing it on the film, and I'm doing like a huge part of it, you know. But I think my biggest advice, I think, for anybody, old, new, anything, you know, trying, starting out, you know, a veteran, is just be passionate, you know. That's really it. I think if you're passionate and you really are trying 100% with all your effort, the world will respond to that and people will notice it, you know. I think just being passionate, really. Everything else comes together. I get a lot of questions like, well, how much do I charge and how much is this and what should I do for my website and what this and that. It's like, dude, those are all little details. All you need to focus on is making yourself the best that you can, and the only way to get that is to be passionate. Because if you're passionate, your work will show, you know. So I always like to go back down to the basic, bare bones of things. If you really want to do this kind of thing, like, oh, my dream is to design user interface for a movie. So you should understand typeface. So be passionate about that. Understand design, you know, understand what makes good design. And then understand what makes functioning design, you know. Understand that and look at the best people that do it. And then develop yourself as a creative. and then relate your work to them and try to be better than them. And then if you have all those all that together, you'll be successful. That's what I think, you know, the world will respond to it. Because honestly, there's a lot of really bad things out there being made and people giving opportunities that I think aren't ready for those opportunities. And that just leaves opportunities for people that are better, you know? So I think that there's a chance for everybody to do what they want as long as they're passionate, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a bit broad, and I wish I had more like, okay, now you send this email to this guy and he'll call you back and then you'll have a job. It's like, nah, it's so much broader than that. And I think that anybody that I really appreciate is just a passionate person, you know, like Stanley Kubrick is a passionate guy, you know, he's a obsessive, compassionate, a passionate person that's really into film, you know? So it's like, people that are great at what they do are just passionate, you know, Steve Jobs and, you know, John Lasseter. I mean, Pixar is a passionate company. You can tell on their films. They make great films, you know, and it's all, it like, you know, seeps out of that place. The passion is just huge, you know? And I think that's what makes it great. You know, everybody seems to be really passionate about what they're doing. And then the product, the end is so great, you know, we feel it, you know? So
yeah.
Just be passionate, people. Be honest. If you really want to do something, just do it. And then if you don't want to do it, don't do it. Mm-hmm. Focus on it and you know, I don't know, put a timeline on things. Try to be realistic about your time, but also every day contribute to your growth, you know? If one day passes and you haven't pushed yourself in a way to develop yourself to be a better person or towards a goal, then you're failing yourself every day, you know? So every day you must respect your goals and focus on it and try to make yourself better. And if it helps, I mean, I have a really bad memory, so I'm huge on lists. So I have lists everywhere. I used to have post-it notes everywhere and then I was getting out of control. So I threw those all away. And now I have like lists on my computer and it's constantly like haunts me. And it's constantly looking at me. And this year, since it's 2013, I set like New Year's resolutions and stuff like that and goals for this year. Mm-hmm. And man, it's haunting the heck out of me, but it's good though. It's pushing me, you know, and it's pushing me to want to do better and be better, you know, and every day, you know, so respect your time, you know, respect it. So
yeah. There really is no one path, like you said. It's kind of just pushing yourself to do those things.
Yeah, and you wouldn't want my path, you know. Mm-hmm. I already got the path. I already did it, you know. You know, and you follow your own thing, like, you know, this is what you want to do. And I think with the era of today, it's like, it's so beautiful. When I was a kid, I really thrived. I wanted to really be a comic book artist, and so I was really young. I was like 14 years old and I was drawing. I'd get the comic book paper and I'd lay it all out, had my stories, and they were horrible, you know, but I'd just draw them. It'd be crazy and I'd love it. And then I would take myself and my little ego as a kid and I would go to Comic-Con and I would go and I'd get critiqued by these guys. They'd have like Artist Center, you know, and this is me as a little kid. And I would go there and they would, you know, they'd be like, okay, well, you know, you should work on this, this and that. You take some anatomy classes. They just, you know, give me their point of view on things, you know. Mm-hmm. But even from then, I was still trying to figure out things. And I think that was just me being passionate, you know, trying to focus on that. And I think that my own path is so just all over the place, crazy, you know, like, you know, I have my own. It's amazing to be here, to be honest. And like I said, it's like I feel like I'm going to wake up tomorrow and I'm going to wake up from the dream, you know, like I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. But not to say it's not hard. I mean, every day is a struggle still. I still struggle every day to try to get things done right, you know. But I think that the path there is, you know, everybody's got their own one. And I think if you have the right ingredients, it's like making a pie, you know, it might change a little bit, but you'll have a good tasting pie if you have the right ingredients, you know. Same thing with life, I think, you know.
Yeah, totally. Oh, it's really fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Is there anything else you want to cover or talk about that you're really excited about right now? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, hopefully this year I have a couple of short films I'm helping some friends out with, and I'm really excited. Those are more passion projects that I get more excited about because I have more control over the creative side. Mm-hmm. And I'm writing out some stories right now and trying to develop my own intellectual property, which has been really great. And so I'm trying to think 5 years ahead and developing my own books and my own, you know, just my own ideas. I have a lot I'm a super, I don't know, I'm super nerdy about this stuff. I love all this stuff so much, you know. I'm mm-hmm. so passionate about it, and I want to give back to the community from which I come from. So I'm just really excited to develop these things more, and I'm just trying to find time in my day to develop these mm-hmm. skills and techniques to give them back to the world, basically. So yeah, there's going to be some really great things, and hopefully, you know, within the next 5 years or so, I'll be directing a film or something. It'll be great, and you know, more things. So we'll see. This will be a time capsule, right? We'll come back and I'll read it. And if I didn't do it, then I'll be in deep trouble. But yeah, I mean, just a big thank you to you guys. And, you know, like, this is really important, I think, to the industry and our community, is sharing thoughts and ideas and talking to people about their paths and stuff. So huge thank you to you guys for taking the time to talk to me and you know, broadcast this and send this out to the internet, because it's mm-hmm. it's really important. So thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for your time. It's been a joy talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Awesome. Well, best of luck to you guys and everybody out there. You know, just follow your heart and be passionate. And yeah, sounds cheesy, but do it. It works out, I promise.
Yep. We'll be excited to see what you're working on in the next few years, too.
I can't wait to show everybody. I'm really excited. Hopefully it works out nicely and everybody likes it. So.
Well, Phil, there were a lot of really great things in that show. So thanks again to Ash Thorpe for joining us today.
Indeed.
So, Phil, where can we find show notes?
I'm glad you asked, Aaron. Show notes with links of all the different things we talked about today, some links to Ash's website, his portfolio, his Twitter. He mentioned Basecamp and some other things. Those can all be found at creativecirclepodcast.com. We also want to thank Ben Schultz for doing the theme music for this podcast. You can find a link to his SoundCloud page in the show notes for this episode as well.
Thanks, Ben.
Well, who's coming up next, Aaron?
Well, I'm super excited because next we have Kurt Heinicke. Kurt composed most of the music for all of the VeggieTales episodes, which was a huge part of my childhood. So I can't wait to talk to him about waltzing with potatoes and talking to tomatoes.
All right.
Have we got a show for you? Where can we provide feedback on the show, Phil?
If you want to send us some feedback about the show, you can go to creativecirclepodcast.com. There should be a link up along the top that says feedback, and you can send us a little note in case there's something you want us to ask someone that we're interviewing, or you have suggestions about who we should be interviewing. Let us know, or just tell us what you think of the show.
And I think you can find us on iTunes there as well.
We are on iTunes. There's a link at the top of the Creative Circle Podcast website, or you can just search for the Creative Circle Podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcatcher and find us there and subscribe.
Do it.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time.